Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey, Driven Woman. So glad you could make it back again this week. And I hope that you've been listening to the last few guest interviews, but also the solo episodes. I've been on a bit of a roll because, you see, I am obsessed with the topic of women and confidence. More specifically, really smart, capable women who lack confidence. It's so perplexing to me, and I've known so many women over the years in college, in graduate school, and throughout my career, in spite of their considerable assets and achievements, they continued to feel that they were lacking something and weren't showing up in a confident way. Well, I think the problem is complex, and I've been doing a tremendous amount of reading and research on it, doing deep dives into books like Gay Hendricks' The Big Leap, which I talked about in episodes 63, 65, and 67. Today's episode that I called The Confidence Habit, I'm leaning heavily on the work of Tara Moore, whose seminal book, Playing Big, really gave women a different look at the glass ceiling. So we're going to continue on with this trend. I think it's extremely important. And the really good news is confidence is not something you're either born with or not. And it's also not something that if you get to a certain point in your life or career, you've missed the boat. In fact, confidence is not a reward at all. It is a skill, a choice, and a habit. And that is really good news because that means no matter how long you have been trying to feel confident and not quite getting there, that can start changing right now. I'm really excited to share with you what I've been learning, and I'll be right back after this. I happen to live in the United States, probably like many of you. And here in the US, women are educated. In fact, more women are earning college degrees and graduate degrees than men. Women also make up half the workforce, and I'm happy to report are a growing percentage of entrepreneurs. Now, we have worked really hard for over 50 years to close the wage gap and the opportunity gap. But men have continued to get promoted faster and continue to earn more than women do. So obviously, there's a lot more work that needs to be done and a lot more factors that need to be addressed. The higher up you go in the corporate ladder, the more striking the gap. In fact, the percentage of high-ranking females has barely changed in the last five decades. Studies of MBA graduates reveal that men tend to initiate salary negotiations four times more often than women do. And even when women do ask for more money, they ask for 30% less than their male counterparts. Ouch! Women don't tend to apply for a better job unless they believe they meet 100% of the stated requirements, while men will apply when they meet 60% or more. So think about this. Even though most of the time women are overqualified and overprepared, they still hold back from pursuing opportunities they're qualified for. Women generally think, I'm not going to be able to get that prestigious position, so why bother trying? And unless they feel they're 100% competent, they opt out and go into a less competitive area or field. Now, listen, men doubt themselves too. Obviously, at least some of them, some of the time. But according to considerable published research, they simply don't do so with such devastating consistency. And in general, when men doubt themselves, they don't let their doubts stop them nearly as frequently as women do. Ernesto Rubin, who is a professor at Columbia, coined the term honest overconfidence to describe this phenomenon. He published a study about a decade ago where men consistently rated their performance at about 30% better than it actually was. Now, you've probably also heard of the Dunning-Kruger effect when people overestimate their abilities. The opposite of this is imposter syndrome. Now, people experiencing imposter syndrome tend to underestimate their abilities or feel that even when they are successful, it's due to luck or circumstance. Sadly, these cognitive distortions tend to break down along gender lines. Now, let's talk about the opposite, confidence. When people are confident, they think they're good at something. And when people think they're good at something, they display self-assured behavior. This behavior includes a more expansive body language where we literally take up more space, a tendency to speak early in a conversation, speak more often, and speak in a calm, relaxed manner. Whether the person actually is as good as they think they are is kind of beside the point, which is mind-boggling. Confident behavior is perceived by both men and women as genuine, and we are not talking about narcissistic, false bravado, or fake it till you make it. People can pick that up. Now, the genuinely confident people among us believe in what they have to offer, and that self-belief is really appealing. False confidence, not so much. It just doesn't have the same effect because people can spot a faker. The body language, the facial expressions, and especially what people do with their eyes, they just give them away. For decades, women have misunderstood an important and unspoken rule in business and politics. It's not enough to keep your head down, work hard, and be competent. Confidence is also a part of what is necessary to succeed because it makes you stand out and it makes you rise. Now, I remember feeling self-doubt and a lack of confidence going back many, many years. Even though I knew I was a good student, I knew I was smart, I got straight A's, so it didn't make sense that I didn't feel confident in school, where I would even be tempted to look at someone else's paper who I perceived as smarter than me. Makes no sense. I remember thinking this is the path I want to pursue in high school and easily being talked out of it by someone who appeared to be more self-aware and knowledgeable than me. In fact, you can see this in many social scenarios where a person who appears more self-assured of their position can get someone, usually a woman, to give up the position she's taking on the topic. The other individual may not know what they're talking about at all, but the perception of confidence transmits a signal that everyone present picks up on, and it influences them. Now, sadly, a lot of what may be considered typical female habits also signal to those present, and it's usually not to our advantage. Women tend to assume blame when things go wrong and will often credit luck or other people when they succeed. That sounds exactly like the definition of imposter complex to me, where men tend to do the opposite. They will put the blame on others when things go wrong and take the credit for when they go right. Study after study after study confirms that perfectionism, which is another trait, largely female, extends through a woman's entire life. So while men are taking risks, making mistakes, learning from them, and course correcting, women are perpetually holding back and getting, air quote, ready. This obsession with being perfect and not taking action until we feel ready, which is the manifestation of perfectionism, leads to an incredible amount of wasted time and wasted opportunities. Because while we are perfecting things, other people are taking imperfect action and moving forward. Now, if our unconscious behavior patterns were not enough, it turns out that biology also plays a role in the confidence game. Believe it or not, there are discernible differences in the structure and chemistry between male and female brains, differences that may actually affect confidence. Now, this is a very hot topic in neuroscience with many contradictory and obviously controversial findings. Some of the research raises the intriguing possibility that brain structure could figure into the variations between the way men and women respond to challenging or threatening circumstances. Now, I gotta tell you, I am personally fascinated by this area of science, as well as the entire topic of gender identity and social conditioning. My goal here on this podcast is not to spark a debate, but to normalize the frustrating phenomenon experienced by virtually all the women I know. I'm honestly also drawn to the topic because of my own struggles with confidence over the years. In high school, I let a guidance counselor talk me out of the career path I had in mind. Looking back, it's so clear. I knew who I was. I knew what I wanted. I knew what I would be good at. And I let someone talk me out of it. After college, my first job, my entrepreneurial traits were quite evident, but I didn't recognize them, and neither did anyone else. As I continued on over the years, I declined to apply for promotions or go after positions that I was absolutely qualified for. Why? I lacked the confidence. I did not think I would get the interview, so I didn't apply. Or I didn't think I interviewed well, so I didn't pursue the follow-up emails in quite the same way. I basically was treating confidence as a quality that I lacked instead of a skill that can be cultivated. Now, to better understand this struggle and why it seems to be true for so many women, I want to take you under the hood. Well, what I call under the hood, meaning we're going to pay a visit to the brain, because that seems to be where the confidence gap between men and women first appears. So we're headed there in just a moment, right after this message. Hey, Driven Woman, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. Maybe you've been listening to it from the beginning, or maybe you are a brand new listener, but either way, I am so glad you're here. And I hope that you are being inspired and motivated and actually learning how to move your life forward with each and every episode you hear. But I want you to know that there is a whole other level that is so much more powerful, and that is actually working with me. I want to invite you to consider that this fall 2021, is your time. I'm reintroducing my group coaching program. It'll be a small group experience that I will carefully curate by choosing the just right members. You might be one of them. To get on the interest list, click on the link in the show notes. There's no obligation, but you won't be able to hear the details unless you get on the list. Okay? So it's coming soon. I want to make sure that you learn everything you want to know to make the right choice for you. Now, if one-on-one is the only way for you to go, there's a link for that too. That starts with a free consultation to make sure that I'm the right coach for the right reason at the right time for you. But if group is more your jam, you got to get on the list. You want to hear from one of my other clients and what she felt about working with me? Have a listen to this.
Well, one thing that you helped give me insight on is how sensitive I am. And because I'm an empath, being in traffic and loud noises throughout the day, just getting to homes, that alone was really draining. And now working from home, it's like I'm able to conserve that energy. And working with the parents to really teach them kind of concepts and bigger things that have a bigger impact. Because one thing that you also mentioned was because I was working so much, I didn't have time to do the things that were meaningful to me. And that included learning, getting into the grind. You kind of just like, okay, well, I'm just going to do instead of really stepping back and looking at more strategic ways to have, a longer term plan.
Okay, welcome back. Here we are under the hood. The amygdala, often referred to as the lizard brain, is involved in the fight or flight response and also the processing of emotional memory. Studies using the functional MRI scan indicate that women activate their amygdala in response to negative emotional stimuli more easily than men. Think about this. Compared to men, women are more likely to activate their fight or flight response to negative emotional stimuli. And again, emotional stimuli is based on perception, not on reality. So imagine you're at a meeting, you just gave some kind of feedback, and you perceive that it didn't land well with the group, or maybe you think you saw somebody roll their eyes or look at their watch or mutter something under their breath. Meanwhile, your fight or flight response is activated and you're not going to be showing up very well for the rest of that meeting, shall we say. Now, what's also true about the difference between men and women's brains and the amygdala in particular is that women will have, in general, stronger memories of negative events. And this increases the likelihood of rumination. Rumination just means rehearsing the past over and over and over. And I don't know a single woman who doesn't identify with this tendency where something has happened and we later replay the scene over and over and over in our heads, thinking, why didn't I say this? I should have said that. I'm so dumb, and literally chastising ourselves after the fact. But it's the rumination part where we just keep going over it and going over it and going over it. I almost think of that as perfectionism after the fact, because not only do we expect to say and do the perfect thing in any given moment, but when we don't think we did, we torture ourselves afterwards. Another part of the brain, the anterior cingulate cortex. This part helps us recognize mistakes and also helps us weigh options. Well, guess what? It's bigger in women, leading us to be more prone to worry and experience anxiety. So think about this. The part of the brain that helps the human being recognize mistakes and weigh options is bigger in women. So our ability to recognize danger and risk, super beneficial to our remote ancestors, and very, very important because we are the gender that is biologically tasked with procreation and childrearing. Wouldn't you think it would be important for our gender to be the one that is more prone to recognizing risks and hazards and dangers? But now here we are in the modern world where women tend to worry, overthink, have difficulty making decisions, second-guessing those decisions after they're made, seeking permission, asking other people's opinions, and missing opportunity after opportunity because we don't want to get it wrong, so we hold back. It's no mistake that half of all adult women are taking anti-anxiety or antidepressant medication, because over time, so many of us have become absolutely terrified of making a mistake, of getting it wrong, of screwing up, that we have literally worried ourselves into a medical condition. And it's not just our brain structures, but our hormones too. The hormones that influence thinking and behavior. Testosterone and estrogen are the forces behind the obvious differences between men and women, but they also play a role in more subtle personality dynamics. For example, estrogen influences the part of the brain involved in social skills, encouraging connection, and discouraging conflict. Now, these tendencies, which are often thought of as feminine energy, more cooperative and collaborative instead of competitive, more focused on connection and making connections, and generally speaking, more enhanced ability to be social and to have social and emotional intelligence. This is literally wired into us and programmed through the chemical messengers of our hormones. But unless women are able to learn how to make mistakes, learn from them, and deal with conflict better, we will not be able to catch up to where men are professionally. Men have about 10 times more testosterone than women do, and studies tie high testosterone levels to risk-taking behavior. It's also like a synergistic effect, because as higher levels of testosterone fuel risk-taking, winning produces even more testosterone, the so-called winner's effect. So higher levels of testosterone mean more risk-taking. When you take risks and you're successful, you're winning. Winning produces more testosterone. So it really feeds on itself. However, this so-called winner's effect can also be dangerous, because animals can become so aggressive after winning that they take fatal risks. And we have plenty of evidence that decisions that are made under the influence of testosterone are not necessarily better. Even hormone levels may be less fixed than believed, because researchers have found that testosterone levels in men actually decline when they spend more time with their children. So this is all really, really interesting. I mean, women don't need to start taking testosterone to learn how to take more risks, but just understanding that much of what we're up against is biological can help us take some of the pressure off of ourselves for not manning up, which I oftentimes hear women say. The question that remains to be answered is, okay, there are these brain-based differences, and then there are these hormonal differences, and obviously men and women are different in nature, but what about environment? I mean, what about the whole nature versus nurture debate? Well, let's talk about nurture. Elementary school is a laboratory, if you will, because this is where girls learn to be good, aka cooperative, instead of energetic, aka competitive. At the elementary school stage of human development, it's frankly easier for most girls to behave. In other words, to be socialized according to expected norms. Girls begin elementary school with a bit of a developmental edge in the areas of attention span, verbal and fine motor skills. They're definitely more attuned and have greater social awareness, and they tend to have better dexterity. So girls have that upper hand with respect to socialization. And that is also synergistic, because since we are more easily socialized, we begin to crave approval, which we get by being good. The result is that many girls learn to avoid making mistakes and taking risks, because being a good girl gets them positive attention and social approval. So being a good girl can definitely pay off in the classroom, but it does not prepare us well for the real world. I was a total teacher's pet and a straight A student, and that felt really good. I had an abusive childhood. I wasn't getting a lot of positive regard at home, so I was totally hooked on the approval I got from my teachers for being a good girl and a very attentive, eager student. But I would only attempt things I already knew I'd be successful at after leaving school. It took me many, many years to learn how disadvantaged I really was as a result of this. Now, many psychologists now believe that it is risk-taking and failure and perseverance that are the essential building blocks to confidence. Boys during childhood tend to absorb more scolding and more punishment, but in the process, they also learn to take failure in stride. Now, again, we are not talking about abuse situations. That is a whole other conversation. But the kind of rough and tumble childhood that most boys have, they tend to be engaging in more pushing and shoving, more talking out of turn, more difficulty sitting still. And, you know, they're not as compliant and cooperative as the girls. So they get scolded more. They get punished more. They get sent to the principal's office more. Far more boys get detention and suspension and all of that. But they learn to take failure in stride. Now, we all know that playing sports is good for kids, but I was surprised to learn just how extensive the benefits really are with respect to confidence. Because girls who play team sports are more likely to graduate from college, more likely to find a job, more likely to be employed in male-dominated industries, and also tend to earn more as adults than girls who did not play team sports. So learning to enjoy both victory and defeat in sports turns out to be really good training for surviving setbacks in business, work, and life. And yet, despite Title IX, fewer girls than boys participate in athletics. And sadly, many who do quit early. According to the Center for Disease Control, girls are still 6 times more likely to drop out of team sports. And the steepest decline in their participation is during adolescence. This is probably linked to the fact that girls suffer a larger decrease in self-esteem during the teen years than boys do. What a vicious circle! Girls lose confidence, so they quit competing, thereby depriving themselves of one of the very best ways to regain it, by competing. They leave school proving they can study hard, get good grades, are determined to please, but somewhere between the classroom and the boardroom, the rules have changed, and most females don't recognize it. I know I didn't. The requirements for adult success are different, and as a result, women's confidence takes a beating. You know, over the last year since I launched this podcast, I have interviewed a number of successful female entrepreneurs, and one of the things I noticed was that those who were able to move into entrepreneurship without a lot of the mindset challenges that hold most of us back, or at the very least slow us down, those who didn't have so much of that mental fuckery going on played competitive sports in middle school, high school, or college. As I go back and I think about the different women that I've interviewed, it's like, oh, wow. That really seems to make a difference. Now, it would be really irresponsible for me not to mention that simply behaving assertively is not a fix. Because when women just do that, they can actually be punished for it in the work setting. And these consequences, this punishment, it's usually not experienced by men. Now, I'm happy to say that attitudes towards women are slowly changing, but they often pay a heavier social and professional penalty than men do for acting in a way that's assertive, but can all too easily be perceived as aggressive. For example, a woman walks into her boss's office with an unsolicited opinion, or at a meeting, she speaks up first, or is perceived as speaking up too often. She may assert herself without being invited to do so, and as a result, for any of these so-called offenses, she takes the risk of being disliked or even labeled a bitch. Confidence is not, as we once believed, just feeling good about yourself. Confidence is the ability to read the room, to calibrate our own behavior, and keep our eye on the prize. In looking at the different definitions for confidence, I think the one that makes the most sense and that I think is the most functional definition is this. Confidence is the belief in one's ability to succeed. And this belief stimulates action. Taking action bolsters our belief in the ability to succeed. And as a result, confidence accumulates. This is the essence of what I call the confidence habit. Confidence is our belief that we can succeed. Because of this belief, we take action, imperfect action, action we are uncertain about the result of, action that may feel somewhat unprepared. But in taking that action, we are reinforcing our belief that we can take action. And as a result, we gain confidence. And confidence is like a deposit in a bank account. It accumulates with interest. Now, I personally believe, and you have probably heard me say on this podcast, that all behavior is habit forming. So in order to become more confident, women need to stop thinking so much and act more quickly. Almost daily, we read new evidence about neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to change in response to shifting our thought patterns and our behavior. We need to commit to doing work that is good enough instead of striving to do work that is perfect. We must learn to act before we think we are ready. And because moving away from comfort and toward fear is, let's face it, counterintuitive, we would do really well to surround ourselves with other women who are doing the same. By practicing behaviors associated with confidence, we can acquire and accumulate the evidence that we are confident, making confidence a habit and not an elusive reward. So in parting, I want you to take action. And it's simple. Pay attention to the confident women you know or even know of. They don't even have to be a part of your life. Follow the confident women on social media. Listen to their podcasts. Read their blogs and their books. Take their courses. Join their communities. Notice how they think, how they act, how they make decisions, the way they carry themselves physically, and borrow the behaviors and traits that you admire. Practice them until they start to feel like your own. I want to make the distinction. This is not fake it till you make it. It is treating confidence as the skill that it is. Confidence is not a reward for being a good girl or doing a good job. We got that all wrong. Confidence is a decision. It is a habit. And like all habits, practice, practice, practice. The expression practice till perfect does not apply here. With practice, any behavior can become natural and effortless. The brain takes over, creates a neural pathway, and confidence is just what you do, you don't have to think about it after a time. Once your brain has that neural pathway in place, you will notice that you are being confident and feeling confident and doing the things a confident woman does. Why? Because you decided to do so and you decided it was worth it to you to practice confidence until it started to come naturally. I mean, let's face it, you have got nothing to lose but insecurity, overthinking, and maybe that prescription for Xanax. So join me in the confidence habit. I think it is well worth it. And tell me what you think about this. Rate and review the podcast. Join the private Facebook group, The Driven Woman. And let's keep the conversation going, shall we? That's all for now. Thanks for joining me on The Driven Woman Podcast.
You've been listening to The Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to The Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.